Okay, I think I'm turned on now. Welcome. I am so glad all of you are here. This is a great group, great group. And I can tell you've all been talking amongst yourselves, so that is a great way to learn. So thank you for being here. My name, again, is Susie Hake, and I am the, I guess, immediate past employee volunteer program manager for Hallmark Cards. I was with Hallmark for 36 years, and in the last 9.5 years of my career there, I was the volunteer manager, and it was, as you know, the best job in the entire world. It was so much fun to help employees get connected to the community at all levels of volunteerism, from boards and committees to being mentors and everything. It was just a wonderful, wonderful job. So in my twilight years, I am kind of still involved in a volunteer basis. So I am very pleased to be here. I would like to introduce the rest of our panel today. And the first person is Shelley Bowling Strickland, and this is her birthday today. So everybody say happy birthday. We're not going to tell you how old she is. How old
no,
you are.
I don't mind.
Oh, how old are you?
The big
4-0. All right. Good job. Good job. Excellent. Shelley is the Volunteer Center Manager of the United Way of Greater Kansas City. Has been in the job for a couple of years now.
It seems like it, but actually it's only been a year.
Has it? All right. Good deal. And just doing a wonderful, wonderful job. Our next panelist is Paula Pratt. And Paula is the Director of Community Outreach at Harvesters. And I say this very openly, but I haven't really known you guys until today. Paula is the best volunteer manager in the community. So she is someone that you really want to get to know and pick her brain. So I am just honored to have her as part of our group today. The next person on our panel is Janice Ballantyne. Janice is the immediate past president of Singles Available for Community Service. And I bet many of you have not heard of this organization, but us single people have, needless to say. So it's going to be fun for her to tell you about that. And our final panelist is Betsy Phillips. And gosh, I've known Betsy for close to 10 years now. She is the RSVP program specialist. Who knows what RSVP is? A few of you. RSVP is working with seniors in the volunteer world, so she works within the United Way Greater Kansas City realm also. So we've got a fairly diverse panel that is, we're going to try to share with you how we got where we are today through our careers, and then how we find the volunteers that we need to support the mission of our organizations. And obviously, that's why we're all here, to support the mission of our organizations. So I'm going to let each of them introduce themselves as far as more specifics, and where each of us are going to talk for about 5 or 7 minutes. But then the bulk of this conversation is going to be dialogue between us and you, between you and you, because we really feel like all of us can learn from each other. So, Shelley, we'll let you go ahead.
Get to be the leadoff person.
Yes.
Again, I'm Shelley Bowling Strickland from United Way of Greater Kansas City, and my journey into volunteer management actually started in fundraising. About 11 years or so ago, I went to work for Rockhurst University in their advancement department, so I worked very closely with both the annual fund director and the plan giving director. Talk about different realms and perspectives here. After that, I went to work for American Humanics National Office here in Kansas City, where I also got involved with the communication side of things with their newsletter, website, the annual management institute where the students attend to gain further knowledge into nonprofit leadership. Then came back to Rockhurst, and that's where I got bit by the volunteer management bug, where I served as assistant director of the Center for Service Learning, and I worked very closely with the undergrad students, which for many of them, they were involved with student organizations, fraternities and sororities, and the freshman seminar piece, and I got them connected to different agencies across the city, like Operation Breakthrough, Catholic Charities, et cetera. Keeping track of their volunteer hours, advising them on ways to make their service in the community more meaningful, coordinating special events such as National Youth Service Day. And for the students at Rockhurst coming in as freshmen, we had a sort of a freshman service day where they actually went out into the community and got to learn Kansas City and to see the types of organizations that Kansas City has. Many of them come from Omaha, St. Louis, and other places around Missouri, Kansas, Oklahoma, and et cetera. So I was very involved with connecting the students with the greater Kansas City community in terms of volunteering and in terms of service learning as well. After that, I went to work for Heartland Habitat for Humanity for a year, where I went back to development and realized, you know, this is why I got out of development, because it's getting harder and harder to fundraise. So my position at United Way became available about a year or so ago. And when I worked at Rockhurst, I worked with my predecessor a lot, so I knew her job. Her job was basically my job on steroids. So needless to say, a year later, I'm here. And the duties and responsibilities I have as volunteer center manager for United Way are to oversee the Day of Caring. And Paula and I have been talking a lot at the table about Day of Caring, which is a one-day service day where federal agencies, companies, organizations, civic groups, and the like all get together to do service. Harvesters is one of about 173 projects that we will have for Day of Caring this year. And roughly we have so far over 2,000 volunteers signed up. And Day of Caring this year is Saturday, June 6th. Day of Caring is also a United Way initiative. Many United Ways across the country engage in either a Day of Action or a Day of Caring. And so here in Kansas City, we do Day of Caring, and this will be our 15th year anniversary. And as my supervisor, Pat Cundiff, would say, we thought it would have a shelf life of 5 years. Now we've up to 15. So there's something very valid and very valuable about volunteering, particularly here in the Kansas City area. We are very altruistic and enjoy paying it forward. So that's a lot of what I do. And I got to work with Susie when she was still with Hallmark, because one of the other components that is part of my job is overseeing the Corporate Volunteer Council. And Embark is one of the companies that's part of the Corporate Volunteer Council, KCP&L, Cerner, Commerce Bank, and et cetera. So many of your top corporations here in Kansas City are a part of the CVC, and we meet monthly to talk about different issues regarding their employee volunteer programs, how to get them engaged in the community, either through Day of Caring or Corporate Challenge or Harvesters or any of the other many nonprofit organizations here in the Kansas City area. So that's two of the big things that I do in my position. I also consult with other volunteer coordinators and managers about their programming, about how to strengthen their volunteer programs, how to find resources to recognize volunteers, to retain volunteers. But I'm also finding out more and more here in the past month that with nonprofits changing, whether in staffing or whether they're combining departments, that there are more and more people that need actual training in volunteer management. And so volunteer management is becoming more and more prevalent in terms of, I need training. What is it all about? How do I create a policy for this, et cetera? So that's the bulk of what I do for United Way. Thanks.
Shirley, before you pass it over.
Yes.
I'm going to share another key part of your job is the listing of volunteer opportunities that I think this group would like to hear about on the website.
Okay. There are several listings that I maintain on our website, one of them being a listing for groups and for many corporations, agencies, and et cetera. They look for group volunteer opportunities as a way to build morale, as team building exercises and the like. So we have a group listing. We also have listings for special events, youth and family volunteering opportunities for individuals, We also have a listing for board opportunities. Many nonprofits are recruiting new board members, and so we have a listing that will help you to recruit new board members when the time comes for you to look for new people to join your board. So we have a gamut of information. Day of Caring is out there. We also have a holiday guide, which is a listing of agencies that are either looking for volunteers or for donations or that just need a little bit of help in terms of helping their clientele. So we have a gamut of different guides, and you are more than free to visit our website at UnitedWayGKC.org.
Okay. Again, my name is Paula, and I'm the Director of Community Outreach at Harvesters. I actually came into volunteer management rather late in life. I was about 50 years old. I had a 31-year corporate career. It's called AT&T now, but I retired from Southwestern Bell, so it's hard for me to say AT&T. The last 10 years of my corporate career I spent in Mexico City and Johannesburg, South Africa, and my husband and I were over there working. We had a wonderful corporate career and got an early retirement offer, came back to Kansas City. But it was definitely time to do something different. And to be perfectly honest, I had not planned to go back to work full-time. But I started volunteering. I had actually done a lot of volunteer work in Mexico City and Johannesburg when we lived there, and I think that's where I got the bug. Certainly easy to see a lot of need in Mexico City and Johannesburg, but you know what I found when I returned to Kansas City was that I really never needed to leave Kansas City to find meaningful volunteer work. We had done some volunteer work before we left, but certainly not to the extent that we did overseas. I volunteered at several nonprofits before I just found myself kind of coming back to Harvesters and got really passionate about the mission at Harvesters and started showing up 2, 3, 4 days a week. And so when the volunteer manager left, I decided, you know what, I think I'm just going to apply for that job and maybe go back to work if they'll have me as the volunteer manager. And boy, what an eye-opener that was. You know, if you've been in the corporate world for a long time, it's fairly easy to see, you know, I've managed people for years. I had an organization of over 200 people when I was in South Africa. So how different could this be to manage volunteers than it is to manage employees? Boy, was that an eye-opener for me. I think if I had thought about it, you know, more seriously, possibly I would have figured that out before I was forced to figure it out very, very quickly. But I've been I started out as the volunteer manager in May of 2002 with Harvesters, so been there almost 7 years, and I became the director of community outreach in August of 2007. And my job today encompasses, I have all of our volunteer programs, including our AmeriCorps program, our ambassador program, our community events, special events, regular and episodic volunteer programs. I also have our nutrition education programs as well as our food and fun drive programs. So lots of support. Don't do that by myself. Got a wonderful supportive staff and also a huge number of volunteers. Harvesters averages about 3,000 volunteers a month. So we have a huge volunteer base that we're very, very grateful for. As far as anything else about, I think we are also supposed to address the types of volunteers. How do we find the types of volunteers that we have? One of the things that I actually walked into was an organization that was extremely well known. The community had a good foundation for volunteers, and so that was it was so nice to start out and to be learning about volunteer management and have kind of a built-in volunteer base. So, you know, lots of our volunteers come to us from word of mouth, or they came maybe with a corporate group, and then they end up coming back with their family or a service organization. But we also do advertise on the United Way website. We advertise on Volunteer Match. And there's a number of those types of sites that we do advertise. And we get people. It's nice to have, you know, new folks come in and be able to see what is going on. And we appreciate those opportunities. Volunteers do a variety of things for us. The majority of our volunteers, as you can imagine, sort and repackage food. But that's not all that they do. We have a very active ambassador program. Ambassadors are folks who go out and speak on Harvester's behalf. We have about 30 ambassadors right now, and it's a commitment that you make, and the commitment that you make is a year, a year's commitment to earn 40 points. And a point equates to more or less about an hour of service. But it's a different type of commitment than coming down to sort food. We appreciate people coming down to sort food, but this is a higher level volunteer that's really making a commitment. You know, your hour commitment to go out and give a talk obviously involves a lot more than that. You have to get your material, you have to do your research, prepare your talk. So that hour, you know, ends up being really, you know, more of your personal time, you know, really than that. They staff poster displays for us. They do, you know, a lot of different things. We have one of our ambassadors that facilitates a lunch challenge for us and a team building experience. So our ambassadors do a lot for us in that respect. One of the things I was going to talk about, different types of volunteer opportunities. We had a couple of our corporate groups talk to us about team building experiences. Great to come down and sort food, but have you ever thought about doing something else in a way to get people engaged in other ways? And we actually put together a committee of people that, you know, helped us kind of work through those issues. And we have a lunch challenge that we do. It's designed for groups of about 10 to 32 people. And the lunch challenge is a competitive team building experience where you learn how to fix a good nutritious meal on a budget, and you compete against your fellow employees, and groups have an awful lot of fun with that. There is a $45 charge with that, and as you can imagine, in this economy, we have not had as many lunch challenges as we've had in the past. But we have a few more that have been scheduled for the summer, and we're very excited about that. And groups tell us it's a great way to do something different when they do have some funds that they can spend on team building. And so many of them couple it with a volunteer activity. They come down to sort food before or after that, or they take a tour of our facility. So it's another great way to get volunteers engaged. Thanks.
My name again is Janice Ballantyne, and I've been a member of SACS, or Singles Available for Community Service, since 2005. I served on the board for 2 years as president in 98, and then the year prior to that as one of the event coordinators. As an event coordinator, I worked with the different nonprofit organizations to help identify what needs they had that our members could help with. I'm an Iowa State graduate with a Bachelor of Business Administration in Transportation Logistics, and I worked for JCPenney for over 23 years, but I am now in between positions looking for an opportunity, and again, with the transportation area. But even while I'm still looking, I'm still very involved with SACS and volunteering. Just to give you a little information about SACS, our mission statement is Singles Available for Community Service provides volunteer assistance and support for nonprofits engaged in charitable, philanthropic, and environmental service activities. Prior to joining SACS, I was involved with volunteering with my church and then through work and United Way and Day of Caring. When my company transferred me to Kansas City, I remember seeing an article in the paper about different singles groups, and I cut it out. And when I was ready to get involved again, I pulled out this article, and I saw the information about SACS and decided that was the group I wanted to get involved in. And I went to their first meeting, which happened to have been that Thursday, and became a member and have been involved with them since. The SACS organization was co-founded in 1997, and it's modeled after a group in Tulsa that was founded in 1991. And as far as I know, there's the two SACS groups. Last year, in 2008, we had over 3,800 hours that we volunteered to the committee or to the community. And that was helping out over 71 different organizations and more than 133 events. And that involved more than 159 of our members. So we do a lot of variety of different activities. Because we do have a diverse membership as far as, you know, age, some are work, some still work, some are retired, some have been, you know, divorced, widowed, never married, male, female. I mean, it's all a real diverse membership, so that we find that there's a variety of events that they enjoy doing, anything from silent auctions to helping out with the runs in the community, cleaning up rivers, planting wildflowers, and planting trees. We help out at harvesters, sorting food or sorting medical supplies. So it's a wide variety of events that we do participate in. We do prefer to work as a group and not just like have one member go and do a weekly mailing of a newsletter or something like that. We like a one-time project, maybe around 4 hours, somewhere between 2 and 6 hours, but we stay away from the all-day events. Most of our events are on weekends. We do have them during the evening hours during the week. And then because we do have retirees, we do have some like golf tournaments or something during the week, daytime hours. I do have some business cards up here, but our website is www.sacskc.com. And if you're a organization that needs has an event coming up that needs our help, on the website there's a tab, Request Volunteer Support, and you can click on that tab, and there's a form to complete that tells about your organization, the event that's coming up, and information, and this will go to our event coordinators who can check and see if it'll get onto our calendar. Then our members will, we have a monthly meeting, first Thursday of every month at St. Joe's Hospital, and the members get a chance then to sign up for the different events. They can also sign up on the web through our website, so if they can't make it to the monthly meeting. And then once we get a event coordinator, event chair, that will contact your organization to finalize the details. We also enjoy having speakers come to our meetings. So if you have an event that's coming up that we're going to help you with, we like to have someone from your organization come and speak to us about what the event is, about your organization and such. I think that's it.
Thank you. I'm Betsy Phillips, and I'm with the RSVP program. And RSVP is kind of an acronym now, just like AARP. And it used to be Retired and Senior Volunteer Program. I haven't used that in a long time. I've been there for about 10 years, sponsored by United Way. And I call it Respond and Serve Volunteer Program. Another good thing is Share, Volunteer, Promote. No, wait a minute. Recognize, Share, Volunteer, and Promote. I just decided that was today a very good idea because it's on our card. My background is probably volunteering most of my life, but I had the good fortune and ability to stay at home with my children when they were growing up, so I did a lot of volunteering at that time. One opportunity that stands out is working with the League of Women Voters, and that allowed me to be a lobbyist for both Kansas and Missouri League, and I was on the Environmental Protection Agency's Water Law Committee. And as a resource, I was able to help the governor of the state of Kansas write our first water laws. And that was pretty exciting. And my daughter, who was 3 years old at the time, sat on the lap of the governor and put her little pen in with his signature at the same time. So it's always been fun to volunteer. And when I was in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, I was director of the Pittsburgh Council for International Visitors. And that was a program which introduced people from all over the world to opportunities to do volunteering and set up volunteer programs all over their country based on what they saw here in this country. So I would set them up with appointments in with newspapers, with volunteer groups like in Kansas City, and they have a Kansas City Council for International Visitors here also. They were interested in setting up programs for addiction and for human resources and respite care, all kinds of things. So we are well known for our volunteering in other countries. When I came back here, I worked as a VISTA. And that's something I'd like to talk to you about, because the RSVP program is under this enormous umbrella called the Corporation for National and Community Service. And you all probably have read about the Kennedy-Hatch Act. How many know what that is? Well, that whole act is based on programs like RSVP and VISTA and AmeriCorps, the Peace Corps, Learn and Serve, Service Learning Projects. And those are all programs that you can take part in as a volunteer manager, as somebody looking for a job, as a VISTA or AmeriCorps. And it's all being promoted under the, or being signed into law. It's already authorized, so now they have to write the way they're going to fund all these programs. But that will enable one thing, for example, is the Silver Scholarship, which will come to every person who is in the RSVP program, or person over 55, volunteering for over 500 hours. They get a $1,000 scholarship, which can go to their own education, or it can go to their granddaughter or great niece, whoever they want to give that scholarship for. And that's something that I promoted about 6 years ago when I first found out about it, but it never really was a fact. Now it's a fact, and it'll probably be by next year something to look forward to as a Silver Scholarship recipient if you're over 55. Isn't that neat? And 500. No, it would be an cumulative. Well, I don't know whether they would. I mean, I might let that be happening. I don't think. But the other thing they're doing, of course, is the Presidential Service Award, which comes through the Corporation for National Community Service, and that is being. Not initiated again, it's being continued. So people who are working over, who have worked over 100 hours, I call it work because volunteering is not just, it's free time, but a lot of volunteers, as you know, are working very hard and very diligently and very passionately to accomplish meaningful goals every day. And so that award comes to all the volunteers over 100 hours a year, and then that is retroactive for, like, the RSVP volunteers have lifetime service awards, which they got in this gorgeous pin and a little document signed by the president. So it's pretty wonderful, too. The advantage of the RSVP program, unlike the not that all volunteer programs are not an advantage. I don't have any program per se. And what I do is match people over 55 with opportunities throughout the metropolitan area, all three counties. And we accomplish amazing tasks by doing that. what I do is collaborate with a lot of programs to develop projects so that if you want a part-time project or something that is not an assignment that is once a week for a year, then you can work on a project that might be only 3 weeks long. Those are the... Oh, sorry. I put it down because I'm not used to this. That's the... I lost my train of thought. I guess that's the main difference in the RSVP program. I'm not competing with any other volunteer program. I'm trying to work in conjunction with what else happens within those projects. And the only stipulation that I have is that I have to have this piece of paper that's signed by all the volunteers so that I can keep track of your hours, so that Congress can pass the laws that will allow more programs to operate with more funds. And you might be interested in knowing that when all of the hearings were taking place before the Hatch Act was passed, I was contacted to send in stories about what volunteers in Kansas City were doing. And that was kind of interesting to be able to do that. And I felt very proud of all of you as directors and of all of you as volunteers, because I could give them substantial numbers of hours. And I even copied some of Paula's statistics about what Harvesters does, because it's just an amazing program here. And so is the Day of Caring. Habitat Restore was another thing that I talked about, because it's one of few in the country. So I'd love to talk to you more about it, and thank you for being here for this wonderful program.
Well, I'd like to address and maybe anticipate some of your questions. We all know that the three components of volunteer mentorship.
The three components of volunteerism is recruitment, promotion, and recognition. And so I want to open it up to all of you to share some of your thoughts, and the folks on the panel too, to address some of these issues. So let's take recruitment first. Talk about how you folks recruit your volunteers. Let's step back. I want to kind of talk about strategies today, because I think that's what a lot of volunteer managers need. I have got so many fires to put out every single day. I know you just don't have time to sit back and say, what is my strategy here so I can make it easier on myself to manage my volunteers in a later date? So let's talk a little bit about recruitment. Who wants to chime in about how you find your volunteers? Mary Kay.
Well, I'll start. I'm Mary Kay Dries. I'm Mary Kay Dries, and I'm with Catholic Charities of Northeast Kansas. And I'm very fortunate that I have a volunteer who has every email of the editors of the different parishes of the bulletins. And it's not that I'm after just Catholics, but it's a captured group. And so if I have a really big need, I will give that to my volunteer, and she will send that to all the 18 large parishes, like in Johnson County, and then for Wyandotte County, the others. So that is one big way that I get volunteers. The other is I'm Volunteer Match and United Way website, and also the Volunteer Center of Johnson County. And, of course, word of mouth is huge. So I really, and especially now, what I'm finding with the economy the way it is, and so many people looking for jobs, and they want to keep active, I am constantly being called by people who want to be involved to keep their skills honed up with what they've been doing in the past, or even something different. And also, it's a good way to network. So at this point right now, I have not had any trouble getting volunteers. My problem right now is finding a really good connection with what they want to do. So I don't know how long that'll last, but I'm, you know, very happy about it right now.
Mary Kay, thanks for bringing that up. If you notice on one of your handouts that hopefully you have, looks like this. I tried to put together a list of resources that you could contact to find volunteers. And if you guys can think of any more, please let me know, because I'm trying to build on this list right now. But there's, of course, like Shelley and Betsy and Janice, but many other organizations too. But let me know some of the big corporations that have lots of people. So, Mary Kay, thanks for bringing that up. I appreciate everything you said. How else do people look for recruitment? Yes, sir.
I'm Colin Chambers with the Arthritis Foundation, and something that we've had a lot of success with is on all of our specifically event registrations, but you could do it with anything else. We always put the question on there, are you interested in volunteering for the Arthritis Foundation? And I heard it at one of these seminars to do that, and so we started doing it, and was blown away how many people said yes. So all of a sudden I have more volunteer prospects than I even always have time to call. Now, a lot of times those people were like, what the heck, I'll check yes, and then you get into it and they're not interested. But before that, we didn't really even have a prospect list. But these are people who are interested in your organization to some extent because they're at your event, and so it's a good place to try and pull them in more.
How many of you have job descriptions of your volunteer activities? Few of you. Good, good. I really, really try to impress on people that job descriptions are really, really important so you know who to recruit and what expertise you need. Almost anybody can do a bulk mailing, but maybe you want to find someone that's going to help the CFO do their income statement. So you want to have that job description put together to maybe it is a CPA to actually do that. So I encourage you to kind of step back and think about what's the expertise I need. Let me document the particular, if not a summary of the job duties that I have open, so I know who to recruit.
I think it's important to never underestimate the power of your own website. Yeah. When anything that we can possibly put our website address on, we do. We had noticed a few weeks ago a real spike. I mean, we get volunteers can sign up right online on Harvester's website. You just click on Give Time and you go there. You can either click on having us send you information, or you can actually download our opportunities, or it'll show a list of, you know, times available for you to come down and sort and repackage food, and you can list, you know, in priority, you know, the date and time you'd like to come. You'll get an auto reply from me saying that we'll get back with you, because we do have to have some parameters around that. So we will confirm that, but the power of the website is it's amazing. The spike that we noticed a few weeks ago, it finally dawned on us. We have, in all the Price Chopper stores now, every time you leave a Price Chopper store, you're taking home a bag that is advertising the Stamp Out Hunger food drive. And we very specifically asked if if our web address could be put on there. So not only has Price Chopper donated all these bags, but we have an extra 500,000 that are going to be delivered to homes in Kansas City. So that's so many terrific opportunities for people to see that website. And we went back and did some analysis, and we noticed that the spike was about when those bags started appearing in the Price Chopper store. So anytime you have the opportunity to put your web address on anything, please take advantage of doing that.
May I make an editorial about websites? I'm trying to put together a list of key nonprofit agencies, and I'll be glad to send it to you when I have it completely edited. But as I go onto these sites, and I click onto the volunteer page, rarely do I find a person's name, phone number, and email. And I can't tell you how that drives me crazy. A name that you can imagine what that face looks like means so much more as opposed to info@ABC nonprofit. It's really important to have a name so you can make that connection, what I call that touch with people who are trying to find out more about you. How many of you have software programs where people can sign up, like Paula does, sign up on your site? Mary Kay, so Catholic Charities, Restore, I saw another name over here. American Royal and Gillis. Great. Did you folks build those sites yourself, or did you buy a package site?
We had a very, very generous offer from Cerner, which was a big supporter of ours.
Right.
Oh, I'm sorry. Cerner was a big supporter of ours, so the first year I was there, that was what I was given the job of doing, sitting down with these young interns and saying,
I love it.
Okay, this is what we need. And they were just so wonderful. They helped us put this thing together. And that has been the key to getting people. Because people get onto the website, they see, okay, the American Royal Parade, they see the hours, they see the jobs, they see the tasks associated. We did team captains so that if you wanted to do that, the name and the email was there so that you would say, okay, Barbara McLaughlin, she's the team captain for the parade volunteers. Get in touch with her. Ask her whatever you needed. What do you wear? Anything you needed to know in terms of how to get to wherever you were going or what you were going to be doing, it's on the website. And you're right. It makes a huge difference when a name is associated. But the Cerner group and DeVry is another group.
Oh,
if DeVry students need a project, go to them, and they will help you with setting up a computer-oriented website for your volunteers. And I'd tell you, if I had not had that tool, I think I would have gone crazy. You really need a tool whereby people can go to and access the information, because you can't be everything to everybody.
That's right.
And then the other thing, if you have numerous events, set up a person that's other than yourself as a team coordinator. Because each group, each event has to have that one person that's there. Because you, again, as the volunteer manager, you can't be everything to everybody. You know, you try to be, but it's a tough job. And then you do a disservice to that event if you don't have somebody below you that's taking care of everything. But Cerner and DeVry students are a great resource.
Good idea, Barbara. Thanks.
Actually, I was limited at the end of the year. I used to be with the American Royal Association. Yeah. And they had a great base of volunteers. And we used that, but we recruited as well. And I should have mentioned this. We would do kind of similar to a job fair, where we'd have the room set up like this, and we'd have a team captain, or a committee person at the table to give you any kind of information that you needed regarding that particular event and what the jobs were. And we would do this kind of more or less toward the end of the summer. And so, again, it was like something that was very informational. We'd serve refreshments. Not, you know, any big deal, but it was a lot that people that don't have access to a computer can come to and sign up. And you've got a huge group of retirees, people that live out in the rural areas that don't have computers but want to volunteer. This was their opportunity to come and sign up for things.
How did you invite them, or who did you target?
Well, we tried to put it into the newspaper. And also, I had a system, a database of our former and current community supporters. So I would e-blast. That was another thing. I e-blast kind of once a week just to touch your volunteers, to touch your supporters, whatever. And that's a great way to keep in touch with people. But not everybody does have access to computers. And that's kind of a downside, because a lot of retirees are your key source of volunteers. So, but they don't have computers, or they're not as comfortable with it. So that's how we would get the message out. And again, word of mouth. If you continue to do something, you know, at the same time every year, people find out, and they're the ones calling you and say, aren't you going to have that volunteer roundup, we used to call it? Yep, it's going to be da-da-da-da-da. And we would have it on a Saturday for a couple hours. And they would come and they would sign up. So it was another great source of recruitment.
If you don't mind, I'm going to kind of move on a little bit to how to promote and advertise your volunteer opportunities, because I want to leave you time to ask questions on your own, too. Let's talk about advertisement and promote. How do you promote your volunteer activities to the community? Sure.
Well, for me, since we're a volunteer center, I always say that we are a conduit in that we don't have volunteers, but yet we have people that want to volunteer, that want to connect with agencies, and we have agencies that are trying to recruit volunteers and contact me to help them recruit the volunteers. So again, it's like a sort of as the middleman, so to speak. So for me, I keep a running list of the people that call, the people that email, and to find out if they want to either visit the website on their own and peruse it at their leisure, or if they want to be on a mailing list, which I produce a weekly list that goes out every Friday via email. And so that seems to be the best way to get the word out about any special events, any episodic opportunities, any ongoing opportunities, because that listing will have a mixture of different types of projects and events that will capture somebody's attention out of the list of 802 people on my list. So so that seems to be working out very well. And again, of course, the whole word of mouth in terms of talking up different events to people like at different events like these, like community fairs or within meetings. That seems to always work out as well.
I'd like to impress upon you, and maybe you folks have not known about the Corporate Volunteer Council that Shelley referred to earlier. It is a resource of larger companies. There's some middle-sized companies too, but larger companies who have literally thousands of potential volunteers that might be interested in your volunteer activities. So, in fact, Shelley and I are going to have lunch next week to talk about maybe how we can kind of expand that, maybe promote opportunities within that group a little bit more. But you've got your Hallmarks, your Sprints, your American Centuries that are craving for to hear about your activities. So I put some of those on the resource page, but Shelley can help you out with some of those too.
I would just say if you're a nonprofit and you've never had the opportunity to participate in Day of Caring, I would sure encourage you to do that next year. We reserve, we'll normally have about 300 volunteers that come to Harvesters, usually between 150, maybe 180 in the morning and same amount in the afternoon. We reserve all of our slots. As soon as we find out what Day of Caring is, we close our volunteer database to any other volunteers except Day of Caring. And you'll find that, that's a great opportunity to get volunteer groups that you've never seen before. And then those volunteers will end up coming back, maybe with a faith-based organization, with their families, with a school group. So it's a great opportunity for you to get new volunteers exposed to your mission and, hopefully be able to give them a tour of your facility if you're able to do something like that. Certainly give them an overview about what you do and hopefully get new volunteers engaged in your mission.
I just wanted to touch base, going back to the corporate volunteers. Are you seeing, or has anybody seen, a decline of corporations willing to give out, allow their volunteers, their employees to volunteer?
Oh, gosh, no. Whose comment was it that in this world of losing your jobs, you want to be kept busy? And that's a morale raiser.
The only difference that I would say that we see, certainly I agree totally about the, it's an opportunity, it's a morale booster for so many people. Our corporate volunteer hours, though, from last year to this year have gone down from 21% to 16% of our total volunteer base. And the reason for that, they're coming back a little bit. We've noticed in the last couple of months that they seem like, I don't know if we see a trend yet, but we keep very close track of, we have the pie chart that shows, where are our volunteers coming from. And it was just a simple matter of there's not, there have been so many layoffs. They're just the people that are still there, in some cases, they need to be on the job and available for work. So we haven't had as many. The ones that do come are still very engaged. And then the other thing that we've seen is a lot of the employees that, used to come with a corporate group have come down and volunteered individually after they have been laid off. And we've started exploring, job clubs. And, we've had a few people come down from job clubs. And we're We're working on trying to host a meeting for one of the job clubs to come down to Harvesters, volunteer, have a brown bag lunch, have your meeting at Harvesters. We have a great room for that. And so if any of you have, you know, an opportunity to host a job club or something like that, that might be a new way to get volunteers in.
Another idea that I'd like you to consider is family volunteering. When I first started out in the business 10 years ago, people would say, oh, I don't have time to volunteer. I've got to spend time with my families. So I took that on as a responsibility of myself to find volunteer opportunities where those folks could bring their families. So that's why we created our Wild Saturday at the zoo, where people would clean up the zoo and bring their families next Saturday. Just things like that. So it might be tough for some of you in the organizations that you have, but if you can come up with family volunteer opportunities where you paint a room or you fix the landscape around your building or, you know, whatever that might be, some team building within the family.
What age range of children did you have participating in family volunteering opportunities?
Well, I know Paula goes down to the Harvesters, goes down to 6 years old. At Wild Saturday at the zoo, we actually had opportunities for kids 6 through 10, away from some of the, you know, more heavy-duty jobs that we did for Wild Saturday at the zoo. I think 5 or 6 is a great job, great way to learn about giving back. Go ahead, about promotion. Uh-huh.
I'd like to hear more about those programs that have people that have a weekly commitment and recruiting for that kind of program. I'm newly hired for Literacy Kansas City, and the volunteers give 2 hour-and-a-half sessions a week and 18-hour training. So help.
I bet. I'm very familiar with that program, and that is a huge, huge commitment. And I think I'd like to hear what other folks have to say, because I'm trying to think of who's in the room that could share. Haley?
We asked for at least a 3-hour commitment for each month for a year. And I think as long as I used to work for Youth Friends, and it was an hour commitment every week. So I think as long as you make that clear up front to people before you even start telling them what it is, so that they know what the commitment is, that you'll have better chances that way.
When you think of literacy, I mean, you think of the natural things of, you know, libraries, book clubs. I think you just kind of have to maybe sit around with some creative people to think, you know, how can I promote this idea with the folks who reading is part of their lives, and they want to share that. We can talk about that later.
I would. Is this on? Okay. I would reiterate that. That's where my VISTA experience was, at Lobach Literacy, before it was Literacy Kansas City. And there are 2 people who are going to call you. I just talked to them yesterday. And I would say that your chances of getting full-time commitment will come with the person who is recently retired or is in between jobs and might have that opportunity for the long training and then the commitment every week or whatever the method will allow that.
Can I ask a question? The 18 hours of training, how is that broken up?
What are the hours for the training sessions?
The organization that I'm with, the Community Blood Center, there's some amount of training for volunteers depending on the role. And I am finding that some folks aren't wanting to really commit that amount of time to training. And 18 hours sounds like a lot when you're telling someone that. So I didn't know how they would respond.
Another thing that you can do is exactly what Pam did, is to research other literacy programs in the country. That's what Pam looked at the community at the Blood Centers, when all of the Midwest, when she was starting her volunteer program in the last few weeks. And so I really encourage you to research what would we do without Google.
Having been a training and manager in a previous life, I found that there is always resistance to people to attend the training. They want to make an impact, and they want to do that with the work of your organization. I can't stress enough the importance of that one-on-one personal contact, the personal contact between the volunteer and the organization. But if you could find any way to move the training into take-home packets, online training, mm-hmm. tests and assessments that they can complete and mail back, that increased training participation, huge.
Great idea. Bless her heart.
I haven't learned everything about it yet.
I should know that. I believe it's 20. I think it's 18, too. I was going to say 21, but I think it's 18. Great.
Because I think colleges would be a great facility. Yes. Mm-hmm. And there's lots of them right here in this area.
Right. And they require volunteer hours. Yeah. Retired teachers.
Great. Okay. Well, let's go on to the fun part, which is volunteer recognition. Who wants to share how they recognize and celebrate their volunteers?
Yeah. I'm Mary Ann. I'm new at the Kansas City Friends of Avonlea. We have celebrating 25 years of our Avonlea camps in Kansas and Missouri. So we're really happy about that. And I'm bringing in the Avonlea American Dance Theater. It's 50-year anniversary last fall. This year we are having Michael Joy do a dance class with our volunteers to show them our programs, our after-school programs.
Great.
So that should be fun.
That's perfect, to share your program to celebrate the volunteers. Love that. Yeah.
My name's Krista Danner, and I am the new volunteer coordinator at the KC Fringe Festival. And a project that we are starting with this year is something of a recognition program. Every hour that people spend time volunteering, they earn basically monopoly money, or what we call fringe bucks. And they're able to use those in exchange for seeing shows, and that's a big push for a lot of our volunteers, not having to pay the ticket price to get in the door and see the show. They can come and volunteer a little while, earn some monopoly money, buy tickets. But then there are those who volunteer the entire festival and they don't get a chance to go see a show, and they have all of these fringe bucks left over. Our goal this year is to have a volunteer appreciation party a couple weeks later and have items that have been donated, and then use that money as a silent auction, so that they can use their fringe bucks to auction or bid on items that are set out, either services, products, tickets to shows, gift certificates to restaurants. We're hoping that that'll really encourage people to keep coming back and participating more often than just 1-2 hour shift here or there during our festival, so that they have a real exciting opportunity. And it thanks them for all the hard work, because we rely heavily on the volunteers.
Another thought that comes to my mind is to get your CEO or president of your organization involved in the recognition. For our recognition at Hallmark, each year we would have chocolate-covered strawberries, and that was, I know, the only reason why people came was because of the chocolate-covered strawberries. But I also would have Mr. Hall Sr. speak, and in the last 8 or 9 years, that was the only time he would speak to the employees, to be real honest with you, each year. But so it was made it very, very special to come hear Mr. Hall talk. So you can kind of take that back to your nonprofits. Maybe some of your volunteers have never met your president of your organization. So this is a key time for you to elevate the level of volunteerism to equal staff, which is so important in my mind, so that the CEO will come in and say, you are as important to staff, and thank you for what you're doing. Other ideas about celebration and recognition? Haley?
We do something else for groups. We give them a little certificate of appreciation, which
And we also let them know how much merchandise they put out, how many hours they gave as far as the volunteer hour, how much, you know, money that saved us in labor, as well as just really thanking them and having our director thank them and their supervisors thank them.
Paula has a great program, too.
Well, we tried to, you know, actually, we try to recognize people throughout the year, obviously, in different ways, you know, depending on their level of involvement and things like that. But we also tried to incorporate some fun activities along with recognizing and also getting work done and bringing, you know, food drive food in. So Harvesters offers birthday parties. So if you have the opportunity to do something like that where you can host somebody's birthday party and, you know, do a little something for your volunteers. Susie had her birthday party at Harvesters. So
you should have seen Paula when I brought the red and white wine in.
I'm like, yes, that was an interesting discussion. We ask you to invite your friends and family to bring the equivalent of 10 canned food items per volunteer, and then you'll volunteer. We'll show you our video, take you on a tour, and then we get a donated cake, and we have these wonderful Hallmark birthday party items that kids love. We have a whole wide variety of those types of things, and it's just really a great way to, you know, recognize that they're coming in, they're making a difference, and to make it be about them as well. We also host a Juliet Lowe birthday party. Juliet Lowe is the founder of the Girl Scouts, as most of you know. And it started out one Sunday afternoon several years ago that we thought, gosh, you know, we're getting these great Girl Scout troops to come in. You know, what can we do around, you know, Girl Scouts? And we kind of brainstormed some ideas with the Girl Scouts. And so found out that Juliet Lowe's birthday is actually on Halloween. And so we had a birthday party on a Sunday afternoon, filled to capacity, had to turn away at least 100 Girl Scouts that were not able to come down. So the next year we did Juliet Lowe Weekend. Last year we did Juliet Lowe Week, and I think this year we will probably be doing Juliet Lowe Month.
Wow.
So that they can come down at any time. We have had as many as 700 Girl Scouts that participated in that, and we have cupcakes, and so we celebrate Juliet Lowe's birthday, and, you know, we have a big celebration, and we ask them to bring canned food items, the whole tour, video, volunteering. So anything that you can do to kind of combine, you know, let people enjoy what they're doing, have some fun, give something to them so that they, you know, can have a little bit of fun when they come. But also, you know, it's all about the volunteer work. It's also about getting new folks in the door that will come back, you know, like I said before, with another group, or get engaged in your mission, you know, some other way. And we do Super Bowl Weekend of Caring. Same premise, Super Bowl, you know, first Sunday of February. Started out Super Bowl afternoon, then it was Super Bowl weekend. Now it's Super Bowl Thursday before through Sunday. And this next year, well, we're actually partnering with the Chiefs on Super Bowl weekend, and those plans we're still working on.
One last question that I'm going to ask, and then I'm going to open up to you folks, is how is anybody in the room working with social media sites like Facebook, LinkedIn, things like that? I'd love to hear your thoughts on that. Go ahead.
We maintain a MySpace page and a Facebook page. We get a lot of...
Can you remind us who you're with again?
Arts in Prison. And we get a lot of interest in our organization through those two pages. We always post volunteer opportunities and events on those two pages. But we really get most of our volunteers electronically off of Craigslist. Post our volunteer opportunities on Craigslist, too.
Interesting.
And that's where most of those come in.
How do you do that? I mean, I'm not that familiar with social Craigslist, but tell us how you do that.
It's just go to your city page, and there's a spot for volunteers, just like there's a spot for any other service that's mm-hmm. available. And it doesn't take – you have to keep all of those pages current. You can't leave
yes.
them out there with nothing changing. People that are going to come to that, just like your website, want to see something new all the time. But it only takes, you know, in half an hour a page once a week to keep that up.
Right.
And I just hired a brand-new college graduate to keep our MySpace page up to date. Cheap. Pay them $30 a month to go in and update the page, add something new to the page once a month, because my
you know, I'm not exactly part of the Facebook demographic, and I want it to be appealing to young 20-something people. So he can take care of that. It's not costing us much, and we stay prevalent.
Thank you. That's great.
I just wanted to mention that the statistics came out. Women over 55 is the fastest growing Facebook user right now. I just joined Facebook.
271. What do you? How many do you have?
I think 22.
You'll get there. I just got on 3 weeks ago, so I'm excited. I'm and addicted. Okay, anybody, any other comments about, yeah, social media?
Hi, I'm Robin Anzarillo with Marillac, and we just hired a new marketing PR girl and has done an amazing job getting us on Facebook, Twitter. We Twitter about some of our special events. We hold a once-a-month fundraising party at Bonefish Grill, so we tweeted about that same day. And so it's really, really impactful, and it seems to be working really well.
Great. Okay, what questions do you folks have for each other or for us? Let's open it up to the room.
I don't know if I missed my opportunity, but here's my question. I'm Marquita Taylor, Swope Health Services. The last time we had a volunteer group was back when we first went into our building. And we want to reach out more into the community and get people involved. We do get some people that ask if they can come volunteer through the website and such. But what I need to do is develop a program, develop the activities, develop the guidelines. Mm-hmm. Because we are a healthcare facility, there's some things that volunteers can do and some that they can't. So I've got to find things that'll keep them interested, keep them involved, and make them feel a part of the organization ongoing, not just for one event here or that type of thing, but as well as the events. But because of what we do, we want the community involved, and we need to find out how to reach out to them and to keep them interested and excited about the organization once they get there.
Mm-hmm. Just my first thought on that is to sit down with each of your management staff people to find it, to have that way you're going to get buy-in from them to have volunteers in the house, to find out what are the things that they need help with that volunteers can do. And then it's going to take you to make those more fun, creative activities.
I think also if you connect with area organizations and groups, like, say, your Swope Health, the Upper Room, which is at St. Louis Catholic Church, would definitely have some sort of buy-in because they have parents of children that attend their reading program. So that could be an audience that you could, you know, once things are developed, that you could target toward, or the churches in the area or other businesses. And then you've got the Brush Creek Community Center down the street as well. So, you know, tapping into those different centers and groups around your area to help get the buy-in, because they will in turn tie into your organization, which in turn, if they have a great volunteer experience, they will, with word of mouth, spread the word. I mean, not only your clients, but also you'll have volunteers that say, well, hey, I'm volunteering at Swope Health Services, and this is what we've been doing, and that will help to create that ripple effect. So getting that buy-in will be key.
I would also just say, I teach a volunteer management course at William Jewell, and one of the things, a paper that was due, the students had due last week, was a needs assessment. And it's really important for, you know, volunteers are not free, as we all know. There's a cost associated with it. So, you know, getting your stakeholders involved, like, you know, what has been mentioned, and sitting down and do a kind of a formal process, you know, kind of a SWOT analysis, and doing your pros and your cons. What do we need to have done? Can a volunteer fill this role? You know, and what's the cost associated with that? So I think a needs assessment is important when you're considering any kind of a volunteer program.
Let me throw in another, you know, different accent here, because you're getting bored. I work for the Whole Person, and I've been with the Whole Person for over 24 years. And we used a lot of volunteers, and Susie Hake knows that. She used to be our board president. My question is, how do you maintain and keep the volunteers from burnout? Because that's what I know. People get burned out if you don't tweak the project. That's what we have lost a lot of volunteers in my organization. We used to have, we used to have tons of volunteers helping the Whole Person, because a nonprofit organization lives and exists on volunteerism, because we don't have a bunch of money to pay all these services that we need the volunteers to do. But how do you develop, maintain, and keep using the same volunteers without burning them out? That's my question.
You want to answer
that? Who wants to answer?
I'll take a stab at it. One of the things that you can do is, you know, you need to stay in constant communication with your volunteers, what's working well for them, what is not. You know, volunteer surveys, but not just surveys, but, you know, face-to-face, you know, getting with your volunteers, talking to them, listening to them, listening to what the staff needs, what the volunteer needs, getting volunteers to get others involved. It's so important. There's a lot of times when we'll have volunteers come down by themselves, and, you know, they're very energetic and very enthusiastic, and unless they kind of team up with somebody, it's really easy for them to kind of drift away, and they don't really tell you why, you know, they've stopped calling. Or maybe something did happen that it's like, well, it's not important enough that I really don't want to complain, but they just sort of, you know, what I call kind of fade away. And so I think keeping in as much communication as you possibly can, and I know every volunteer manager is saying, that is just, you know, that one more thing on my plate that I need to do, but somebody needs to stay in contact with volunteers to see how it's working for them.
I think you also have to look at, the way your position description looks. Usually when I have all the stations, which are the programs that are involved with RSVP, send in position descriptions every 2 years. If they're the same description and the volunteers are not happy there, that's probably the reason. Kay Weir is a good example of somebody who cross-trains all the volunteers at the hospitals. So all the hospital volunteers are trained to do 50 different things. And they can choose, if they really get burned out on something after 6 months, to do something else. And that process works very well.
That's a great idea, Cross.
Janice, I would just be curious to know.
Me too.
What engages your folks? Why do Zach's folks keep coming back? Different positions, you know, different opportunities, but still, why do they keep coming back?
I think with us, a lot of it is we want to stay busy. You know, sometimes the issues that we may come across is if going to an event and there's too many volunteers, and then we just stand around. Mm-hmm. We want to volunteer, but we want to be sure we want to volunteer. We want to do something. And the main thing is that people just like that volunteering. They want to feel like they're making a difference.
You mentioned that you like to go in group. Mm-hmm. What is the average size of your group?
It depends on the event. We can probably anywhere from 3 people up to 15 to 20. It's real hard, depending on how many events we have for the week. We try not to overbook so that we can provide enough volunteers for the event, but it's hard to get more than 20 for one event. So anywhere from 3 to 20.
Can I make just a real quick comment about something Janice said that's so important? You got to keep volunteers busy. That is so important. I can't tell you how many times Hallmarkers would come back to me and say, boy, I'm never going back there again. They weren't organized. They weren't ready for us. They didn't have the materials. We stood around waiting. So I just, that is so, so key.
I would just add that volunteers feed off success the same way employees do. So any opportunity you have to connect your volunteers, all of your volunteers, with the organization's successes, either reporting it to them or letting them participate in something that's related to it, and also to offer opportunities to elevate their level of responsibility or the different ways that they engage helps to avoid burnout, because now they may be doing the same thing, but they're doing it in a little bit of a different way and at a different level.
Something that I also like to know after we've helped with an event is if the organization could get back, you know, email or whatever, and let us know what your results are, if it was a fundraiser, to know how much you raised for that. Because then we take that back to our meeting so that they can see, you know, what they've done.
Great idea.
Ms. Hake said, the worst thing a volunteer can experience probably is to be asked to do something and then have nothing to do. Another issue is to have a group of volunteers come to your campus or come to your facility, and you have everything there, but they don't know what to do with it because you haven't thought through it in a proactive fashion, saying they don't know what to do, so where's the maintenance person with the master key? If the paint's all stirred up, but it's over here, and the painting that's to be done over there, it's that last step to connect and make sure. A third thing is hospitality. If they're going to be there for an extended time, make sure that they are fed. That really pays a lot of benefits, and I won't go into the details of what we've done at Gillis, except to say that we had 25 Cerner employees on campus, and of course we have residential kids, and we invited them to eat with the kids, and the cooks made a wonderful barbecue of chicken and hot dogs and hamburgers, and you know, and they sat with the kids, and they really appreciated, you know, the chef came in and he made sweet rolls in the morning and so on. So I think hospitality and recognition are things that are important. And then just to, if I can address your question, you know, offer a suggestion, and that is that since none of us have the time to reinvent the wheel, I would look at an affinity organization or a similar organization outside town in the community, you know, another city, see what they're doing. Also, we have a number of great hospitals and other medical service facilities in town who have great volunteer programs, and the shell of their program might fit you, even though maybe the specifics wouldn't.
Absolutely. Also to that point, Shelley, a long time ago, Pat Cundiff had an actual document on how to run a volunteer program. Does she still have that?
With her now being semi-retired, she is passing along a lot of that information to me. So I will be the key holder, if you will, for that type of information, so that in situations like this, if you're either developing a program or wanting to enhance your program, that the United Way would be a good source to get that type of information, and as well as networking with other like organizations to find out what their growing pains were, what worked, what didn't work, what would you do differently if you had the opportunity to do it all again. So there are definitely a lot of resources available to help in these types of situations.
I have. Oh, you have it? Okay.
Oh, great.
Betsy, I have a question for you based on a phone conversation that we were having, that RSVP volunteers are not old, frail people just wanting to sit around and stuff envelopes. Can you talk a little bit more about your volunteers? Are they wanting to bring their professional expertise? What they're offering?
Definitely, they are. And what do you think RSVP age is? Based on retired and senior volunteer program that it used to be called, 65? It's 55. 55 and over. And that was the magical age, I guess, of retiring 35 years ago when RSVP began. So now nobody's retiring by 60. I shouldn't say nobody, but it's rare that people are retiring at 65. And if they are, then they are retiring to do another venture. But I'd say the average age of the volunteer at the hospital, for instance, is more like 79. And that's a crucial number to keep in your head, because we're going to need all those people at the hospital you see. How many people do you see at the hospital who are volunteering when you walk in, who help you? And those individuals are going to be retiring.
That's true. That's a good point.
And it's really important to think about those things as really a wonderful place to volunteer, just as an aside, because my mother was the president of the Women's Auxiliary when I was growing up, so I've always thought hospital volunteering was great. The people who are calling me who are 55 and over are wanting to do weekend volunteering. The people who are 72 and are about to retire are wanting to do all kinds of things that they can utilize the skills that they've always had, or they have a dream of something they've never done before, and they want to be a master gardener, or they want to build birdhouses. They want to do, one person wants to play the piano and called the other day to see where he could play the piano. And I found that's a place nice. For him to play the piano.
Oh, that's nice.
That's what he'd always wanted to do. So he's going out to a kindergarten class for one time, and then he plays at a senior center during the dinner hour.
Love that.
Yeah. And so that's what you need to think of in terms of the person who's calling you who says, I'm retired and I don't know what to do. Ask them to think about your dreams. And more importantly, ask your staff to think about what they'd always wanted to do and couldn't do in their program because they didn't have volunteers to do it. Lo and behold, you have people who've come up with all these skills, building computers to writing the computer program, to the engineer who called me who used to teach at UMKC, and he has about five things that he wants to do, kind of his bucket list. But as a volunteer, not bucket list like flying an airplane. So those are the kinds of things that I'm finding. Yeah.
I was going to say we probably have time for one more question, but I know I will be glad to stick around for a little while. I don't know if the rest of the folks can or not to ask your individual questions. That would be fine.
I know you serve this in this capacity at RSVP. But what is the formal name of the Retired Executives Program? I think sometimes...
Executive Service Corps of Greater Kansas City. That's a different program.
It's a different program, although the documents for that was written by the Corporation for National and Community Service.
Right. My point is that sometimes nonprofits forget of the management expertise that's available.
Absolutely.
For free.
Hallmark has actually... have you all heard of Executive Service Corps? Executive Service Corps is a gold mine for you guys. It is retired senior managers of companies who are volunteering their time to nonprofits to help with strategic planning and consulting.
And so does SCORE, S-C-O-R-E.
But Cindy Worthy is a head executive director of Executive Service Corps, and I don't know who the Executive Director of SCORE is. Betsy, do you know
they have four different people, but okay. They do the same thing, but it's free, and they come out to your program.
They do amazing research work for you in strategic planning that a lot of people don't know about them. Thank you for bringing that up.
Could I read one? This is a website at Temple University, and... it's called Capturing Experience, How People 50-plus Can Help Your Organization. It's a free online volunteer management course. It's excellent.
Great. Thank you.
And just go on to that Temple University, and it's www.templecil.org. And it's just a wonderful course. And I was trained in it in Atlanta, if you all have any questions.
Thanks, Betsy. That's great. Well, this has been a wonderful afternoon. Thank you very
much. T-E-M-P-L-E-C-I-L.org.
Great. Is there a dot in between?
CIL.
Okay.
.org.
I think if you. Thank you. Hopefully we'll get you out of here on time. We appreciate all your great questions, and hopefully we've spurred some brain cells today.
Well, and thank you, Susie and Shelley, Paula, Janice, and Betsy for being a wonderful panel today. Everybody should have at their place a sheet that has all of their contact information, and they have generously offered that. And so if you have follow-up questions, you can follow up with them. You will be receiving a short survey this afternoon, so we'd appreciate your feedback on this session as well as suggestions for other sessions. So thank you very much, and have a wonderful afternoon.